You're listening to Gameplay on TSN 1050. We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. Welcome to the third and final hour of the show. A reminder, Leafs head coach Sheldon Keefe will be on just after 4 o'clock on Overdrive. If there's one website I recommend to go to, footballoutsiders.com, the perfect place. Check out the podcasts, the articles, and to get yourself to the AFC-NFC championship game and just dive fully into all things DVOA. Joining me now, the creator of it, and you've seen his work all over the place, it is Aaron Schatz. Aaron, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate it. I saw this stat. I think it was from ESPN Stats and Info about an hour and a half ago that I don't want to say blew my mind, but I just was amazed with. And I wanted to get your take on it. Okay, is that all right?
Sure.
Kansas City is 3-1 in the playoffs with Patrick Mahomes when their in-game win probability dips below 5%. I imagine it was below 5% after Buffalo scored with 13 seconds to go. The rest of the NFL is 1-38 since 2018 in that same situation. KC is 3-1. The rest of the league, where there's a lot of good quarterbacks and coaches, is 1-38. I don't know your thoughts on that stat, but I think I spent about 5 minutes talking about it earlier in the show.
Yeah, I mean, Mahomes is incredible, and what they were able to do against Buffalo was incredible, and I mean, what else can you say about Mahomes at this point? He is fantastic and does amazing things, and does amazing things in situations where you expect the pass. He's, like, historically been very good in third and long, and he's historically been very good trying to come back from a deficit. And, like, all the times when you know he's going to pass, he gets it done anyway.
That right there, that last line. Y'all know he's going to do it, and he still can do it. I think that's what amazed us when New England beat Buffalo on that windy Monday night game. Everyone knew they were going to run, and they still had success. And, I mean, that more than anything else might be the best thing about Mahomes, where we all know what's going to happen, and he still converts.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, look at what happened on Sunday night, right? He had no choice but to pass the ball. They had the ridiculous number of yards to get. He had two plays to do it, and he did it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really is as simple as that. So far in the playoffs, what's been the most predictable thing that you've seen? And then, Aaron, on the other side, beyond maybe the last 13 seconds of that game between the Chiefs and the Bills, what's the most shocking thing you've seen from the playoffs? Maybe from the perspective of what your numbers say is going to happen, but never did happen.
I think the sort of most predictable thing is that the Titans lost. You know, that after all that the Titans fans talked about the injuries hurting their team and the power of the bye week and everything, and I believed in the power of the bye week, but in the end, the Titans just were not a very good football team compared to other number one seeds in the past, and they lost to Cincinnati. The most surprising thing, I think, was on the other side of number one seeds. I think the most surprising thing was just how bad the Green Bay Packers offense was last week.
Yeah. It was. I mean, like, when they scored that first touchdown, and they didn't have a third down on that drive, and then after that, it was all punts and mistakes. I mean, I don't think anyone could have seen that coming after that first drive. A lot of the dummies like me are like, that's it. Green Bay's going to win this game going away.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And obviously didn't end up like that. And Green Bay's offense had been fantastic the whole year, except for week one, as long as Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback. And that was, you know, they're basically their second worst game of the year other than week one. They just completely face planted on a national stage.
Yeah, no, they did from top to bottom. I think the play that stuck out, and I talked about it earlier in the week, was you had Devonta Adams being covered by Josh Norman late in the game, and Aaron Rodgers misses that throw The next play is a sack. The next play is a blocked punt that tied the game at 10. I think that was the moment for a lot of us. We were just like, I can't believe how bad this offense and just Aaron Rodgers. And it wasn't like it was a horrible Ryan Tannehill game, but just such below his normal production.
Yeah, we knew their special teams were really bad, but for the offense to play that badly, I mean, you know, we can blame special teams and we can blame that blocked punt, but, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to win the MVP, and he couldn't score more than 10 points in that game, so it was bad.
Yeah. From footballoutsiders.com, we're joined by Aaron Schatz. Will warmer weather and an extra day off, can that help the 49ers offense that couldn't score? And everyone looked really beat up late in that game.
Yeah. Will the 49ers score more against the Rams? I think that they will. Obviously, being indoors is a big help. The thing about the 49ers and the Rams is the 49ers are sort of built to beat the Rams, right? The Rams on defense like to play back with two safeties. They like to let you run on them and complete short passes to take away the deep pass. And the 49ers like to run and complete short passes.
And the 49ers defense, what do you expect for them? I mean, they've been incredible. Matt Stafford's had four interceptions against the 49ers defense. What are your expectations for that defense?
In Stafford's defense, three of those interceptions were on really deep throws of more than 40 yards.
Okay, so, that's a great point. By the way, that's a great point because, what I love about that is we just look at the interceptions, and so often we forget to look at the context behind them.
Right. He's played well. He played well, certainly, in the last game. Not in the first one, but in the last game, he played well against the 49ers, and they did well with deep throws, and that's the 49ers' weakness. The 49ers' weakness is deep throws. And going after the cornerbacks, other than Emmanuel Mosley, who's been their best cornerback this year, going after the other corners with deep throws is, you know, proven to be pretty successful for every team, except for Green Bay for some reason. And I think the Rams will be able to do that. I expect a good amount of scoring this game.
Yeah. So then, from a betting perspective, not going to tell you to, you know, do you think he'll get plus minus 7.5 receptions, but I do, to your point, Cooper Kupp, whatever his over total is, and the longest reception of more than 28.5 yards. I think that there's no such thing as a safe bet, but that feels like as safe as you're going to get.
49ers were 31st in DVOA covering number one receivers this year, and they allowed Cooper Kupp to go 118 and 122 yards in the two games. So I definitely like the Cooper Kupp over receiving yards prop.
I still love, and maybe I'm just too much on the public on this one. If I put money on Jimmy Garoppolo under, and it's like 223.5 yards, what are the DVOA, what do the numbers say about him? Is this just recency bias because last week was dreadful?
Recency bias. Our numbers point to Garoppolo going over. He went under 200 yards in seven games this year, but he also went over 300 on seven games this year. Garoppolo's passing yardage is very dependent on game script. So unless you think the 49ers are going to take a big lead in this game and just run all over the Rams, I would go with the over on the Garoppolo prop bet, not the under.
All right. That's why we have Aaron Schatz from footballoutsiders.com on the show. Hey, and if you don't know the answer, this is fine. I want to go back to Cooper Kupp for a second, and just because I love the history of the NFL. Cooper Kupp's year that he has had, do you know where that ranks? I mean, or at the very least, since you guys started covering DVOA, just what this season, where it goes up against some of the great receiving seasons like the Calvin Johnsons and Randy Mosses of the world?
In total value, which we measure with DYAR, which stands for Defense Adjusted Yards Above Replacement, in total value, this came out as the number one wide receiver season we had ever measured. Going back to 1983, but it would not have been number one if it had only been 16 games.
Right. Okay. But with that extra game and since 1983, I can think of like three or four Jerry Rice seasons that always sort of blow me away.
If it had been 16 games, he would have come in fourth.
Oh, okay.
Behind Michael Irvin's 1995 and two Jerry Rice seasons.
Yeah. Okay. That makes total sense. Anyone under the age of 30, Google Jerry Rice. Go on YouTube. And by the way, when you're there, do Barry Sanders and get back to me in 6 hours when you're done going over all the highlights. The numbers, I think I'm like most people. I'm taking Kansas City to win and cover, and I think the 49ers keep it close. I feel like I'm in the majority, which makes me nervous. I'm wondering where you're sort of leaning to in the games.
Basically the same. I mean, I think 7 is just about right for Cincinnati, Kansas City. But if you put a gun to my head and make me take one side of the line, I am taking Kansas City -7. And I feel good about San Francisco +3.5. I don't necessarily think they're going to win, but I think they're going to keep it close. The Rams are currently third in weighted DVOA. The 49ers are currently fifth, so there's not that much of a difference between the two teams.
I'll leave you with this, and again, joined by Aaron Schatz. Follow him on Twitter, @FO_ASchatz. Is there one storyline or matchup that really just has you interested from either an analytical standpoint or just more of a narrative standpoint?
I mean, the biggest storyline is whether Ja'Marr Chase can do to Kansas City the same thing that he did to them 4 weeks ago. He basically beat them by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, how are they going to defend him to stop him from doing that? The fact is Kansas City played better than Cincinnati in that game.
Yep.
Okay, we have a stat we call post-game win expectancy. And it looks at the DVOA splits and it says, if you played this game over, how often would each team, would you expect them to win? And the fact is you would only expect Cincinnati to win with, given how they played in the game, you would only expect them to win 22% of the time. But Kansas City just got so many penalties, and Ja'Marr Chase was just such a ridiculous freak of nature in that game. I mean, he basically won Rookie of the Year in that game. I mean, I was going to vote for someone else, and then that game happened, and then that was the end of that.
Wait a minute. Yeah, sorry. Oh, no, sorry. You were going to finish your point. I wanted to bring something up, but sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Aaron.
No, just saying, I think how do the Chiefs cover Ja'Marr Chase is the best storyline out of these two games. You were going to ask me.
Oh, I was going to you know what? I'm going to hold that for 1 second because I agree with you. In that Chiefs Bengals game, it was like 3rd and 20 or whatever, and he would just Burrow would throw it up deep, and it was single coverage every time. And every time Ja'Marr Chase made a ridiculous catch, you're right. Like I can't see Kansas City, single covering
him.
But
even when there were safeties around him, he would then reverse field and run for another 50 yards. It was like absolutely ridiculous. Like they had safeties out there, but.
You're right. That one short catch early that he just turned into a long touchdown. No, I was going to ask you before I interrupted, bad hosting by me, was I believe last time we spoke, your Rookie of the Year, were you going to vote? Was it an offensive lineman? Was it you? I was wondering if you were making the hipster pick instead of taking Mac Jones.
I was. I was going to vote for Creed Humphrey, the Chiefs center. I was going to vote for him for Rookie of the Year until Ja'Marr Chase essentially destroyed the Chiefs by himself. And I was like, well, I mean, Creed Humphrey was good this year, but I mean, Ja'Marr Chase just destroyed Creed Humphrey's team on his own. Like, how could I not vote for him?
Hey, listen, I don't blame you. Every 2 o'clock, we do 20 minutes on Creed Humphrey's. It's our best ratings period of the show. Aaron, always appreciate again. Everyone out there, go to footballoutsiders.com and just, what am I seeing here? 99 cents a week to get all the inside access.
FO Plus with all kinds of historical splits with our stats, fantasy football research tools, projections, and picks against the spread. 99 cents a week for an annual subscription. Our big previews of the two games will be up tomorrow morning, but there's a lot of other content right now about how Matthew Stafford is playing and the Chiefs offensive line breakdown and DFS advice for this week. So check all that out on our site.
FootballOutsiders.com, 99 cents per week. You said historical stuff. Can I find anything on Jeff Hostetler and the 1990 New York Giants?
Oh, it's there. It's there. We've got 1990. We've got all the way back to 83. And we're adding 1982 and 1981 this offseason.
Oh, that's fantastic. Hey, Aaron, always appreciate it. I know how busy you are, so I appreciate you taking the time.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Take care. That is Aaron Schatz from FootballOutsiders.com. All right. On the other side, Sheldon Keefe talks about the new line combinations, and we get back into the overtime win, the Leafs over the Anaheim Ducks, not even overtime, in the shootout. And a reminder, Sheldon Keefe will be on Overdrive at 4:10 today. That's coming up in a moment. But first, and let's see what's going on. Apparently, there's a lot of trucks out there. Let's see what's going on in traffic. Welcome back, everybody. This is Gameplay. I am your host, Matthew Cause. Question for you there, Conrad. Were you watching the Leaf game and you wanted to get angry when it was tied at 3, but your brain said, hey, they've dominated this game? And did that hold back, or was there Leaf rage coursing inside of you?
There was a little bit of rage. I mean, honestly, the second one, even though it was unlucky, the third one was kind of fluky as well with the tip-in. But after the second one, I was just a little bit more disheartened because they had the 3-1 lead. They were all over them. And to give one up going into the third period instead of 3-1, making it 3-2, I just felt like, hey, this is getting tight again here. So, yeah, not too much rage. I try and dial that back these days, but it definitely wasn't a great feeling.
I definitely had some rage when it was tied at 3 because I'm like, here comes expected goals and all of this. And the thing is, the logical side of me was like, Toronto killed them. When it was 3-0, but Toronto has killed them. There have been so many, you know, just the post got a workout last night next to Gibson, and he was great. You know, he like just with 8:50 to go in the third, McCabe and Tavares with brilliant in close chances. And they couldn't do anything in overtime. Nylander with a point blank chance. There was tons throughout, and also good for him. Like all the goals he gave up, they were all in the power play, including 1 5-on-3. And like when you see Matthews, Tavares, Nylander, Marner, and Riley on the ice, I sit there and I wonder. I mean, how the hell is anyone going to be able to stop that? Especially when you got it for like 80 plus seconds of the game. But when that 3-2 goal happened, I think everyone was just expecting the worst because Toronto dominated the first 17 minutes or so of that second period. You would look up and there would be Mikheyev and Tavares and Marner and Kampf and Hall and Matthews, and everyone dominated, puck on their stick, keeping it in, cycling. You know, the odd man rushes, 5:56 to go in the second period. Toronto's up 25-9 in shots. Matthews draws a penalty. Jacob Silverberg gets a hooking penalty. Toronto goes up 3-1, and then when they're up 3-1, Sheldon Keefe calls a timeout. He's like, nope, calling a timeout. Calm everyone down. Make sure that our Ducks, I was about to say Ducks in a row. Oh, horrible by me. And then what happens soon after that timeout? Aggressive finish to the power play. Anaheim goes on the counter. Silverberg leaves out the net, comes out and scores. It was kind of a 3-on-1. Felt more like a kind of, 3-on-1.5. It was a good shot by Silverberg. The guy has 2 goals coming in. I thought, Campbell, you make that save, it's over. Like, that's the funny thing is, if Jack Campbell makes that save, it's a 5-1 game. Like, I will not be convinced otherwise. And Campbell was, had some good moments late and in overtime and obviously on the shootout. But that's a goal you kind of want back. And I think in the end, both things can be true. John Gibson deserves a ton of credit. He's been fantastic. And you're also allowed to be upset because it feels like the Leafs have been goalied by a kabillion times over the next best team. Like, I'm thinking back to the Arizona game. Like, it just, like, I want this stat. I don't know where to get it. It feels to me that at the end of the year, when every goalie is asked, what was your best performance? I feel like Toronto, that name will come up more than any other team.
And Matt, not to mention how you made mention of of Silverberg there and how he scored it is only his second or third of the year. And just a week ago, I believe it was Ryan Reeves who scored his first and second goal of the year. So it's not just goalies. It's the low scoring total guys as well who are getting in on the fun against the Leafs this season. So you're getting it from both ends, Matt.
Yeah, Ryan Reeves, when he got that two-goal game, first time since like 2013, he had a two-goal game. On the positive, Mitch Marner, four-game goal streak, point streak over the last four games, four goals, three assists. His goal is a one-timer. A one-timer on the power play. Nylander, three-game point streak, had a, you know, and now has a goal and three assists in his last three games. For Jack Campbell, his second lowest save percentage in a win this season, 17 saves on 20 shots. One of the big stories was the line combinations. Let's hear from the head coach. Here is Sheldon Keefe on the new line combos.
I really like the flexibility, for sure. The ability to move things around. That worked out the way that I thought it would and the way I had planned it in terms of, you know, getting Willie extra shifts up with John and Mitch. And, I think there was one or two. We got Austin, extra shift with Kerf and Willie. So that worked out the way I thought it would, and I like that. In terms of the chemistry of the group and the flow, it's going to take some time. I mean, we can't assess that just off of one game. And it was a funny game today, too. There wasn't a lot of flow to the game. There was a lot of whistles. At least it seemed that way. I don't know if the no fans or whatever maybe played into it, but it just felt like a very slow game with lots of stoppages.
And, yeah, I think overall, I don't think anyone watched it and go, okay, that line combo is out of place. And they'll have a couple days of practice. Their next game isn't until Saturday, a game that you can listen to right here on TSN 1050, 6 o'clock pregame, 7 p.m. is the puck drop. And give me the other Sheldon Keefe clip where he, you know, he talks about that timeout and he throws himself under the bus on that 3-2 goal.
I'll own that one. I think you know, we call a timeout there. I mean, our power play was feeling it so much tonight that I just thought it would call a timeout, give those guys a breather, let them go back out for the last minute or whatever was left there, minute 10. And they were great. I mean, they had a couple good looks. They hit the post. And they overdid it at the end. You know, you need to get a line change towards the end there. But that's something that the second unit is accustomed to doing. And they get off the ice, you know, before something like that happens. And I failed to point that out to our guys to be mindful of that. So that's on me.
That was kind of nice of Sheldon Keefe. You could say it's on you, but I think it's that one's a little bit more on the players. You called the timeout, try to settle things down, but whatever. The Leafs get the win. They get both the process and the result. The process was great. The result was great. In fact, that game got tied. I know a lot of it is a testament to the goalie, but if you were upset, I will allow it. All right, on the other side, Jack Armstrong is going to join the show, and I want to talk to him about the last 3 minutes of games. The Raptors have lost to the NBA's elite in the last week or two, and all of it came down to execution or lack thereof in the final 3 minutes. So we'll get Jack's opinion on that and so much more. That's coming up in a moment. But first, time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back to Gameplay. I'm your host, Matthew Cause. Leafs at Red Wings on Saturday, right here on TSN 1050, 6 o'clock pregame, 7 o'clock puck drop. And as mentioned, Sheldon Keefe will be on overdrive just a little bit after 4 o'clock. And then if we project a day afterwards, NFL Conference Championship games on Sunday, and you can listen to them right here on TSN 1050. I'm joined now by the coach, the voice of the Toronto Raptors and all things NBA. It is Jack Armstrong. Jack, thanks so much for joining the show today.
Hi, Matt. How are you, buddy?
I am doing well. I'm doing well. I mean, I was happy to see DeMar DeRozan look great, play great. Bummed out the Raptors lost to the Bulls last night, 111-105. And I wanted to start by talking about your thoughts on the last 3 minutes of games. And recently, Toronto has played the elite of the NBA. Phoenix, Miami, Dallas, Chicago. These are teams that lead their divisions, their conferences. Against the Suns, they were up by one with a minute 41. Against the Heat, it was a three-point game with 1:48 left. Against Dallas, Van Vliet hit a long three. Toronto led by one with 1:55 left. And finally, against the Bulls, OG Anunoby dunk. Toronto led by one with just over 3 minutes to go. In all four of those games, they ended up losing. And I know it's a long-winded question, but I just there was a lot of exposition I had to get out. I'm just wondering your thoughts in these recent fourth quarter games.
Well, you're talking to a former college head coach with a 154 career record, and there'd be so many games where, you know, we play 40 minutes in the NCAA. Obviously, the NBA is 48. And, you know, if the games are 34, 35, 36 minutes, that'd be a pretty decent coach. unfortunately, those 4 to 6 minutes extra change things a little bit, sometimes a lot. And I'm joking, but my point is there comes a point where when you get into the final moments and the real short strokes where you got to make your putts and the little things matter and talent level matters and depth matters and all those kind of things, it comes out. And to me, I really like where the Raptors are headed. I like where they're at. I'm having fun watching them this year. I think they're on the way back. You know, last year was kind of a aberration and a difficult year playing in Tampa. But the previous years, as we know, they made the playoffs 7 years in a row and won a title. And I think they're at that beginning stage again that, you know, hopefully leads to something really cool down the road. But they're not there yet. And clearly, you know, the bench has its struggles at times. And Nick Nurse has, you know, decided to tighten his rotation. And as the head coach, he knows his team better than anybody else. And I just think that there's a wear and tear on that happens. So I guess to me, I think February 10th is a big date to look at between now and then. Can they add maybe a piece? And it doesn't have to be something dramatic. It doesn't have to be a big name person just to help the cause. Because I think if you get one more guy, I think this group not only can be in the playoffs, but can be a really difficult team to play. But I just think they come up a little bit short because many times they're on demand. And I just think that has a wearing effect over the course of a long game. And it really shows late in games.
Yeah, and when I it was my opening thought today was about the last 2 or 3 minutes of these games. And I said it's not just about, you know, the big stars, but it is about the heavy minutes. It's about the lack of depth and also partially, you know, just not playing in front of a crowd. And I think my overall thought was those last 2-3 minutes of games against, and it needs to be said again, against great teams. Like the Suns are number one, the Bulls are number two, the Heat are number one. Is this like it, to me? It illustrates just the gap between Toronto, who's a solid middle class team. It just exemplifies the gap between Toronto and the truly best teams in the league.
You know, and to me, I don't think there's that much a gap. It's there. It's evident. It's obvious. But the types of guys they have and the makeup of their team closes that a little bit. Yep. I think Nick Nurse, pound for pound, is as good a coach as there is in the NBA today. That closes the gap a little bit more. And I wouldn't say we're down to the short strokes, but I would say that, you know, they're, you know, they're not far off from being a team that you go, oh, my goodness. And, you know, if you know, maybe they get the sixth spot and they play right away in the playoffs. Maybe they're in the play-in situation and they get through that. But I think if you're the other team, whether that be Milwaukee or Brooklyn or Cleveland or Chicago or Miami, I really feel like if, you know, if they can improve their roster just a little bit, they'd be a heck of a team to have to play in the first round. I mean, if you get Ken Birch healthy again, and everyone's talking about they need a center. I'm not buying that.
I'm not buying that as well.
I think you just need a little bit more juice, a little, just another guy, like Mihailuk or Watanabe, guy like that. They've had their moments, but right now it's clear that they're not playing a whole lot, if at all. But someone like that, a wing guy, that he's on the weak side and the ball finds him because people are loading up on the better guys, and that guy can make two or three threes or generate a play or two off the bounce. I really think that's what they need. I feel confident in a Kem Birch and a Precious Achiuwa or whatever way you want to play if you're worried about the five spot. I mean, to me, I think it's more a matter of this is a perimeter league. This is a skill league. This is a league based upon shot making and spacing. And to watching how Pascal Siakam's passing the ball right now,
it's incredible.
I think he's playing the best he's played in his whole career. He's playing better than he was when he was on the All-Star team. He's playing better than he was when he was All-League. He is, a tough night last night, but that's okay. What I'm seeing right now is an incredible next step for him. And Van Vliet is giving you All-Star effort. And OG Anunoby's a really good player. And Gary Trent Jr., as you can see, can really play. Scotty Barnes was a steal in the draft. So they got dudes. They just need, and again, they don't need another. It's always great to get another great big name player. But based upon cap, based upon where they're at right now, that's probably not the way you're going to navigate it. And again, you look at the teams that they had starting in, 2014, their first playoff run. You build by, in my opinion, not only build by talent, you build by winning. And I think this group has enough in them to be a winning team. And again, it might be the John Salmons, Gravis, Vasquez. You don't need like a superstar. You just need a guy or two that is a good, solid pro that can bring certain things to you. And, I kind of wish like a Mihailuk was a little more consistent, because I look at him, he can't create. He's shown at times that he can shoot the ball, but unfortunately he doesn't do it with regularity and consistency, and there's a reason why he's been on a few teams now. And I hope for his sake he breaks through and becomes that consistent player. But that's kind of what you need, is that one more guy, one and a half guys, whatever it may be, that can just kind of take a little bit of a load off of a Fred VanVleet and a Pascal Siakam. Because I tell you what, if VanVleet sees more single coverage, if you throw two guys at Siakam and he's passing it so well right now, and you got options at every spot that can punish you when you leave them open, they're good. And they defend well enough. They turn you over. They're scrappy on the glass. Again, they're well coached. The details are good. They just need somebody to break through. Maybe a Banton or a Flynn breakthrough here as we go along. I don't know. I have no idea. But it's just one of those things right now where I honestly don't think they're far off. Is there a gap? Yes, definitely. There's no doubt there's a gap. But I don't think the gap's as big, as good as, we're looking at the top team. I'm not scared of Miami or the Raptors have played great against Milwaukee, and am I scared of those teams? Based upon what I've seen so far, they're not head and shoulders above anybody else. They're good, but I tell you what, you get in the middle of a series with them, and you improve your roster a little bit. I tell you what, you could make some noise in a series against any of those teams.
Yeah, and to add to your point, again, drawn by Jack Armstrong, but everyone knows that, is like, take the Bulls game last night. If Gary Trent Jr. doesn't get eliminated, doesn't get ejected, I think there's a much better chance the Raptors win. Delano Banton miss those two free throws, and the Raptors miss that offense. And really, that is what Toronto needs, is they need that one other scorer. And again, doesn't have to be like an elite player, but that one guy that can get you two or three buckets down the stretch when you need it. I think that's far more important than center. And then the one name you mentioned, like if I'm looking at this year, you know, Malachi Flynn. I wonder how different this team would be if Malachi Flynn and a lot of guys regress. And considering how well he did last year, where in relation to how late he was drafted, he had a great rookie year. But if he could have taken another positive step forward, maybe it would have meant less wear and tear on Van Vliet and that other scoring option that that the team needs.
Well, just two things. Number one, you know, when we talk about regression, I don't know how much regression. I'm not there every day in practice, so I can't tell you. I can't speak to that. I can tell you, though, that a year ago, he was on a team that wasn't winning, and obviously they shut some guys down, and guys were banged up, and they, you know, they were playing in Tampa. They had a COVID outbreak, yada, yada, yada. But he was getting numbers on a team that wasn't winning. So now you have a team that's better, and they're winning more. So those minutes are harder to come by. Ask Fred VanVleet when he had to play behind guys when he first got here, or Pascal Siakam. The bar has been raised now. And so my point is, there's a lot of guys that play for teams in the league that are on the bottom half of the league that get numbers, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're ready to help you win.
Yep.
And I think for a guy like Malachi Flynn, this is a good test. This is a good opportunity for him to grow as a player. He's playing with a guy like Fred VanVleet, who's a wonderful role model for him, as was Kyle Lowry for Fred. And I think in time, with patience, there'll be some great lessons for him. But I like the fact that every minute he gets, he has to earn.
Agreed.
And I think that's what made Fred VanVleet a better player. That's what made Pascal Siakam a better player, OG Anunoby. To me, that's what good organizations do. That it's not, you know, you could go play at the Sacramento Kings right now. I'm sure Malachi Flynn could play on some of those teams right now and get numbers. The question is, do those numbers translate at this stage of his career where he can impact winning too? And I think there are phases and stages that a young player has to go through. And to me, unfortunately, in our society, you know, everything's about, I heard the coach of the Oklahoma City had a great, the Thunder had a great line a few weeks ago. He goes, there's a big difference between Skittles and spinach. You know, like you can get the quick sugar high or you can grind and it's not as pleasant and it's not as sexy. But in the long run, and I said this last night, I was on with Brian Hayes and O-Dog and those guys. You know, a lot of times the team that you break in with, in many ways, determines the type of pro you become. And I think for a guy like Malachi Flynn and Delano Banton and the 905 organization that they have, and Patrick Mutombo is a wonderful coach, that I think in time, going back and forth and having to pay your dues and get knocked around a little bit, but being around a winning team with high character guys and great coaching and accountability, in time, I think those guys have a chance. Maybe they're just not ready yet. But in time, it's been proven to work, and I think it'll work again. And sometimes it works for you, and then ultimately you might turn that guy into an asset. As good as DeMar DeRozan and Jakob Poeltl were, and you attach your number one pick there as well, they were turned into Danny Green and, more importantly, Kawhi Leonard, and you get over the hump. So, development isn't not only for the sake of improving your team on the court in your own uniform. Sometimes it improves your organization being able to have assets that you can move as well.
I would rank, by the way, Jack, I would have Smarties and peanut M&Ms higher than Skittles. But I'd have them all ranked higher than spinach.
But it was a great quote.
It is. I love that quote. It stuck in my head.
And it really kind of defines what we go through. It's interesting. I just read an interview earlier today with a guy who just passed away, one of the legendary scouts in basketball history. His name is Tom Kachowski New York guy. His brother Steve just retired. He's in the Canadian Basketball Hall of Fame. Steve was the great coach at St. FX out in, on the East Coast. And Coach K was the Olympic, you know, was the coach of Team Canada, everything. And his brother has a great, had a great line. He says, why do they put blinders on horses? And his whole point was, you know, in an era now of social media and instant gratification and all that, it's so hard to keep young players dialed in. And his point about Kobe Bryant, I was reading it, you know, he saw all these guys when they were high school players. And his point about Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant in the interview was those guys did have blinders on. And his feeling was, yeah, there wasn't social media yet, but those were guys that were so special, that were so dialed in, that they weren't going to be stopped from getting to their goal. And I look at a guy like Fred VanVleet, he has that type of mentality, that kind of makeup. And I think what you have when you have a good organization is that you challenge guys to put those blinders on and to really dial in and say, hey, this is not about being good. This is about being great, because good is the enemy of great, you know, and it's all about staying focused and keep growing and keep grinding. And that goofy analogy I brought up about the spinach, but to me, that's such a big, big thing. And again, the better organizations, I don't care in what sport, do it better, because they challenge guys, they hold guys accountable, and they make them go through their steps, and you don't skip your steps.
That, from someone who has spent a career doing long-distance running, you know about not skipping steps. All the best, Jack. Love it. Love having you on. Love the passion. We will chat soon. Be good and be safe, my friend.
Thanks, Matt. And when you skip steps, obviously you fall right on your face, so it's never good.
That is true. That is Jack Armstrong, the coach. Coming up on the other side, it is Sound of the Day, but first, traffic.
This is Gameplay on TSN 1050.
See, that's a cool G, Daddy-O. Now you gotta let it ride.
We're going all in on the coverage. You can bet on it.
Sound of the day! Sound of the day! Here comes the sound of the day!
Go back to the coach of the men's national soccer program, Canada, taking on Honduras. They got three games in 7 days. Here's what the coach had to say.
Again, we're one game at a time, and we're six games away, and every game's going to be a cup final, so nothing's changed for us. I think that's whoever comes in, whatever that squad we roll out, I don't think the mentality's going to shift. There's a clear purpose in this group. They know what they want, and we'll do anything we need to do to get after it.
And that is tonight against Honduras in Honduras. Then they fly home. They take on America on Sunday in the cold at BMO Field. Then they travel to El Salvador. It is the CONCACAF qualifier. Canada, again, is top of the table. You get a win now. It takes less pressure in that game against the United States. That is going to be a ton of fun. You got Lakers taking on the 76ers. So, and tomorrow we'll get into that. Plus, get you set for the weekend. The NFC-AFC Championship game is going to be fantastic. But stick around. Sheldon Keefe, coach of the Maple Leafs, is on overdrive at 4:10. That's it for me. Catch you tomorrow. Have a great night, everyone. Time now for a News Talk 1010 traffic update.